Penguin Random House Audio presents Love and Trouble, A Midlife Reckoning. This is the author, Claire Dieterer. I've never got used to the queen being grown up. Whenever I see her cut-off head on the money, I think of her as 14 years old. The queen has had grandchildren since, discarded thousands of hats, grown a bosom, and, heresy to think it, the beginning of a double chin. None of this fools me. She's in there somewhere, that other one. Margaret Atwood, Cat's Eye. Chapter 1. You Now. You did everything right. You made some friends you could count on. You got a job. You found a mate, a really nice one, and you bought a house and had kids. You didn't even think about it that much. You just did it. You worked really hard all the time. You were a faithful wife, and it's okay to say it out loud, an above-average mom. And you dressed cute, but not too cute. You were a little afraid. You were a lot afraid. You could feel your chaotic past behind you. You could hear the girl you were, a disastrous pirate slut of a girl, breathing down your neck. You wanted nothing to do with her. But sometimes late at night, while the babies and the husband were asleep, you drank Maker's Mark in your living room, even though you were still breastfeeding, and you listened to music alone in the dark, and that girl came closer and closer until you turned off the music and went to your marital bed and slept your dreamless drunken sleep. You woke up and your teeth felt like nervy stubs from all the grinding. You had a headache that lived inside your teeth. You accumulated this life over a decade, maybe two, like a midden or the nest of a bowerbird or a creepy shut-in's collection of nail clippings. Anyway, it all piled up, accreted, because that was the way you wanted it. You are the kind of person who gets what she wants. You wanted to accumulate this beautiful life. A life that, for all its beauty, ignored the person you'd been. You worked your ass off getting here. You moved to the country, or that's what you called it. Just because you take a ferry to get there and you have farmers for neighbors, that doesn't make it the country. It's just very, very picturesque suburbs. In the fake country, there was all the nature you craved. You had woods in your new backyard and a badminton lawn and a poorly kept garden that you described to yourself as romantically overgrown. Also, the schools were terrific. The house you bought was a bit bigger, so your daughter and son didn't have to share a bedroom, even though it's great for kids to share a bedroom, but maybe a little uncomfortable as they get older. You bought a nice new couch because toddlers left the old one as stained with shit and vomit and blood as the back seat of Travis Bickle's taxi. You had orthodontia for the children who got really large really fast. In your safe, pretty house in the alleged country, across the water from the city where you grew up, you mostly forgot about the girl you were, the lost soul. She was such a clueless bitch, you didn't really want to think about her anyway. Maybe you conjured her at parties with new friends, parents from your kids' school who laughed politely at your crazy stories. You woke up embarrassed the next morning. And then one day, it's as if a switch is flipped. This day comes in April 2011, the spring you are 44 years old. You don't know it yet, but on this day, your season in hell has begun. You stumble out of bed. Your husband, a journalist, is headed somewhere far away on assignment. But before he leaves, he brings you coffee in bed and then yells up the stairs at your children. You rise and go into the kitchen, lean dizzily against the counter, and watch them come in their multitudes. Well, there are only two of them, but they seem like more in the morning. Your daughter, solemn and big-eyed and possessed of a slyly wicked sense of humor, is 12, just around the age you were when you started going off the rails. Does her 12-ness fill you with anxiety? If so, you're not quite admitting it to yourself. She grows more beautiful every day, even as you grow homelier, no matter how many chaturangas you perform. A friend discovered at the health food store on your island something called emu oil. As far as you can tell from the gnomic description on the tiny bottle, it appears to be secreted from the glands of emus. Which glands? Unknown. Whatever, it makes you and all the other ladies in your neighborhood look great. Glowy. Everyone goes for it in a big way for a month or so, but after a while, it just seems too gross. Meanwhile, your daughter appears to be coolly lit from within by some tiny inner moon. Does her comparative glowiness make you feel that your own mortality, your own youth, is drawing inexorably to a close? Again, not in any way you care to admit. Your son for now is a simpler matter, 9 years old, cherubic, and uncomplicatedly loving and gleefully loud. And here they come every morning with their crazed hair and vacant eyes. They are like sleep-hot monsters who need to have the wildness of dreaming smoothed and fed and nagged out of them. Your husband is picking up his suitcase and heading out the door, and the kids are looking for their shoes. Because from the time they're born until they're 18, there will be one constant. Lost shoes. Your life is relentlessly communal. You are necessary in every conceivable way. This is how you wanted it to be. Blessedly alone at last, you sit down at your computer to work on an overdue article. Your focus is shitty. Through the open window, you hear the call of a spotted towhee, which sounds exactly like the Austin Powers theme song. The spring air is the very gas of nostalgia. It reminds you of schoolrooms, of wanting to flee your desk, of the escape artist you used to be. As you sit there, you find that all of a sudden, you can't stop thinking about her, the girl you were. The thing is, you don't really remember her that well because you've spent so long trying to block her out. You suddenly want evidence of her existence. You go down into the basement as one in a trance and start rummaging through boxes. You kneel penitent-like on the cold cement floor, looking for her. Letters are easy to come by. There are boxes full of them. They overflow plastic bags. They fall out of books like flat, fledging birds. Letters were the way you and your friends found one another when you were young. You stuffed your little all into an envelope and dropped it in the box and waited. Friendships were kept alive for years in this manner. Letters weren't rare and precious, they were the papery stuff of life, or emotional life anyway, and that's really the only life you cared about when you were young. You stack the letters neatly in a pile and you keep looking, rooting around like a truffle pig. Photos are a little scarcer. People didn't used to take photos for everyday entertainment. When you were young, seeing a photo of yourself was an event. Oh my God, you'd think, I'm backward. Because, of course, you only ever saw your mirror image, which was a lying bastard. Your diaries, which are a multi-volume situation, prove strangely elusive. They aren't all stored together. Each move from house to house has scattered them into different boxes. It's as though you've hidden yourself from yourself. You begin to tear through boxes. You find a diary crammed into a carton of old concert t-shirts, T-shirts that themselves could be read as a diary. The Rolling Stones Tattoo U Tour, Beat Happening, Died Pretty, The Melvins, The Presidents of the United States of America. You find another diary wedged between layers of your children's baby clothes, which you are saving because you are a sap. You find three mixed up with books from college by people like Clifford Geertz and Michel Foucault. Whenever your hand falls on one of these diaries, you feel a whoosh of luck. It is the book you most want to read. You haul all this stuff out to your backyard studio, a tiny building a few necessary yards from your house. This is where you come to while away the hours by yourself, avoiding your family, like one of those emotionally withholding British husbands who spend their days in the shed at the bottom of the garden, pursuing who knows what obsession, porn, philately. You, on the other hand, come out here to write and cry. It's luxurious to have a little house where you can go to weep, though your actual surroundings are pretty humble. Salvaged windows, plywood floor, spare furnishings. You give an experimental little sniff and smell what is unmistakably an animal tang. There's a nest of raccoons living under the shed. You spend too much time out here. It's one of your escape hatches. Without admitting it, you've been building a little collection of these over the last few months. Ever since around the time you turned 44. Maybe they're starting to get out of hand. You've always been close with your best friend, Victoria, but suddenly you're on the phone every day like lovers. I had tuna fish for lunch. I cried instead of eating lunch. You're both married to men who are smart and loving and tall and funny.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?